Jen, you alluded to this. There are added layers of shame and secrecy and isolation because she's going to ask questions like, how did I not know? How did I not know? Like, this should be obvious. And then if I stay, what does that say about me? And if I leave, what does that say about me?
Welcome to the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast, where we explore the journey from heartbreak to healing and transformation. Here are your hosts, Chris Rocha and Jen Howie.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. We are excited to chat with you about a topic we haven't even touched yet on the podcast. And so today we are welcoming Vicky Teedy. Vicky is an author, speaker, and betrayal recovery coach, and she specializes in helping women navigate the pain of sexual betrayal and relational trauma. Her book is When Your Husband's Addicted to Pornography, Healing Your Wounded Heart, and she's been facilitating support for betrayed partners since 2012, circa 2012.
Vicky holds a Master of Ministry. She is an APSAT certified partner coach, a certified professional coach, and she co-leads life renovation counseling and coaching. And there she supports both individuals and couples who are seeking restoration after infidelity and sexual addiction. And today she's here to talk with us about the betrayal in the area of same-sex attraction. Welcome. Welcome, Vicky. So happy that you're here today.
Thanks for having me, ladies.
Absolutely. So excited to just see your face. I've had the pleasure of being in some APSATS classes with Vicky, and she's just light and joy. You just kind of exude the fruit of the spirit.
Well, thank you. That's all God then. We're going to give him the credit and the glory for that, for sure.
Love it. Well, welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And we talked pre-roll about maybe you sharing some of your story to kind of get this conversation started. And I think that's a great place to go. So let's go there.
I will tell you, it is a topic that not many people are talking about. And that's why when you asked me what I would like to speak on, I was like, how about this? Because half of my clientele, I have a pretty full caseload of betrayed partners that I work with, and half of them or more experience same-sex attraction. Their husband experiences same-sex attraction. I should be clear on that. And so I have a real passion for this, and I will say this not to scare your listeners, but when I say half of my clientele is this, that's not because 50% of betrayed partners are experiencing that. It's just because this is a niche that we really work in and thrive in, and that really is because of my story. So you mentioned my book, which came out in 2012. When I wrote that book, there were only a couple of resources available for women who had experienced betrayal. I was kind of breaking new ground. And so that book was based on my experience of healing from my first marriage. And I'll be honest, I didn't have any betrayal training because that wasn't even a thing in 2012. So I'm a two-time survivor, I say, of betrayal in my marriage. My story begins where I was fresh out of college and I was married for 3.5 years. And I struggle sometimes to find the words that convey the trauma that that first marriage held for me. And when I wrote When Your Husband Is Addicted to Pornography, I didn't really feel safe telling my whole story at that point. So I embedded portions of my stories in the vignettes that are in that book. And now I'm telling a little bit more of my story because it's been, you know, 30 years since I walked through that first betrayal. But there was a season of my life when betrayal inside of my home existed long before I had language for it. My first husband was same-sex attracted, and he sought connection and sexual fulfillment outside of our marriage. And the entire time was insisting that nothing was wrong. You know, you've probably heard these stories, but I would often wake up to an empty bed and the familiar glow of a computer screen behind a closed door. And evidence accumulated. There was a significant lack of sexual intimacy and secret correspondences, and eventually even a trip across country that he took with a man that he'd met online. And I won't go into all of the details about, like, there was so much evidence that as a young bride, I didn't want to say what I thought might be going on. Do you know what I mean? In fact, I went and got counseling for myself from a Christian counselor going, what is wrong with me? Like, I just got married and I thought we would be, you know, having sex and we're not. And like, what's going on? And so there was just, I took ownership of the situation and thought, surely I must be broken. But again, as he took trips, in fact, I often share the story that, I mean, he brought another man on our honeymoon with us. That should have been a big red flag, but it wasn't. But eventually, my pastor and Christian therapist and family supported the decision that I needed to make to leave that marriage. And in those early days, I just clung to Jesus with everything I had. I had a daughter from that first marriage, and that was kind of an amazing thing because we really were not sexually intimate very many times ever in our marriage. So that was maybe just God's gift to me, because she certainly has been a gift. Mm-hmm. But then, so we divorced, and 3 years later, I married my husband, Mike, that I am in full-time practice with. He's the other half of Life Renovation Counseling and Coaching. And he knew my story, and he knew it included betrayal. And, you know, I had received limited counseling after my first marriage ended. So I carried a lot of baggage, you know, like I brought that into the marriage. He was a therapist, so I was like, he'll figure it out. He can kind of figure out what's going on for us. And he was incredibly supportive. I became a speaker and started speaking for women's retreats and conferences. And when I would go, I would tell my story from my first marriage. And all these women were saying, me too, me too. I'm experiencing this pornography thing in my marriage. And could you write a Bible study about that? And so that's really what When Your Husband Is Addicted to Pornography is. It's written in a Bible study format. Mike even, I remember, helped me come up with the title of that book. But what I didn't know is that he was fighting his own battle with unwanted sexual behavior. And I wouldn't discover that for the first 23 years of our marriage. And that discovery about destroyed me. Like, it was like, again, Lord, really? And while there were some similarities between Mike's behavior and what I experienced in my first marriage, the difference that saved our marriage was Mike's heart. And he immediately took ownership of his deception and his behavior. And no joke, within weeks, he was like meeting with a recovery coach. He was working on our full therapeutic disclosure. He pursued recovery like with a fervor and with a repentant heart. And he pursued it with humility. He learned how to practice emotional regulation and empathy, and he did the 12 steps. Like, no joke, poster boy. Like, if we could say poster boy of what you want recovery to look like, that's what he did. And after our rite of truth, where he shared the full disclosure, then we started attending couples coaching and betrayal trauma informed with a betrayal trauma informed clinician. So betrayal is always going to be a part of our story. It's just not our entire story. And, you know, our passion now is to help other people who are walking through this as well. And I will say, and I'm going to explain this in a little while here, but there's kind of a spectrum of behavior in this same-sex attraction arena, if you will. And Mike was on the low end of that. And so I'll explain that more in a little bit. But it kind of gives you a sense of where I'm coming from and why this is such a passion for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you are sharing that there is a spectrum here, because Chris and I were just talking a moment ago with you about how the fact, like, I've had a lot of women who have husbands that have had this issue. And Chris, you haven't had that in group as much as we were discussing. Okay, well, have you not had it in group, or has it just not been brought up? Because there is a certain level of shame that a woman carries when she finds out that her husband's either been looking at gay porn or has been acting out with same-sex individuals. And that is, so just bring it. Just bring it today, because there's so many women out there who are sitting there so alone with this one piece. Maybe they've had the freedom to tell a lot of their story, but a lot of them are holding on to this one little piece that people don't know about. Mm-hmm. And we need you desperately to speak to those individuals today.
My first question is, when a wife discovers that her husband is experiencing or experiences same-sex attraction, how is her trauma experience similar to, like, what Jen and I have been through and different from other forms of betrayal? Maybe a different way to ask that would be, what makes that experience uniquely painful or destabilizing compared to other forms of sexual betrayal?
Well, let me just say this. I mean, there's a lot of similarities, and you know, they're going to feel shock and disorientation, that loss of felt safety, the rupture of trust and the threat to their marriage, that all of that is still true. Their nervous system response, you know, of hypervigilance or anxiety, grief, fear, all of that is the same, whether it's same-sex attraction or opposite-sex attraction. I think, and the question of, you know, what's real here and who am I in this now? Like, all of that is the same as it is. And I'm going to use this terminology periodically through the podcast, but I'm going to refer to SSA, which is same-sex attraction, and OSA, which is opposite-sex attraction. And most listeners, if you're listening because you've experienced betrayal trauma, it's because of OSA. But understanding how is this different? Well, one of the things that happens for someone when they discover their husband has been looking at gay pornography or something else along the spectrum is they have some identity confusion of their own. Like, was our marriage ever real? Was I just a cover? Was that, especially in the Christian world? I mean, sometimes it can feel like we are the cover. They need to set up house. They need to have a family so that they can live this other life. I mean, that is a question that's going to come to mind that is different. There, Jen, you alluded to this. There are added layers of shame and secrecy and isolation because she's going to ask questions like, how did I not know? How did I not know? Like, this should be obvious. And then if I stay, what does that say about me? And if I leave, what does that say about me? And so these wives will get into a support group and they're going to talk about all the other things that they have in common, but they may not feel safe bringing this piece up, which creates more isolation. I think in the culture that we live in, the secular worldview, there's a lot of fear of being seen as intolerant if she names her pain. And then again, I think this is true in a lot of situations when betrayal comes to light and there's been a discovery. If he gets into support, they're going to dig into what was the root of this? Where did this come from? Well, very, very frequently, the root of SSA is that there was a significant childhood trauma, often sexual abuse by another male. It can also be other emotional abuse where they have been, you know, demasculated or emasculated, right? And just made to feel less than and controlled. And so when that happens, and now we recognize that he has this emotional trauma, then his struggle might take priority over her trauma. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. There's a lot of women that I've spoken to that their first question that they go to their husband after they find out some information is, wait a second, you're gay? And then he'll say, no, I'm not gay. You're like, clearly you are. Look at the evidence. And he tries to explain, no, I'm not. And so there becomes this interesting area of shame and struggle that the marriage and the individuals have as they try to wrestle out this concept of someone not being gay, but being involved in same-sex.
Yeah.
You know, pornography or whatever it might be. So can you help us explain why it's so important to separate the experience of the same-sex attraction from assumptions about the identity, about the behavior, or about the intent?
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, so like real quick, one of my questions that comes to mind, or as I've heard about this before, it kind of makes me wonder, okay, is same-sex attraction within a betrayal scenario a deeper deviation? You know, is it he went to a massage parlor, he went to prostitutes, now he's trying out men. Is it an experimental thing?
It can be. I know. You know, and so here's the thing I would say to Jen, because the example you give is perfect, right? Like, you've got this woman and she's found this, he's looking at gay porn. Let's say that's, it's as simple, if you will, quote unquote, as that. And she's like jumping to the fact that now he's gay. That must mean, like, if A, then B. Like, and that nothing could be further from the truth. Okay. It is not that simple. I'm going to say this super clearly and over again. Okay. Attraction does not equal arousal. Arousal does not equal desire. Desire does not equal behavior. And behavior does not equal identity. So I'm going to break down each of those words because I think it's super helpful. Same-sex attraction has almost become a garbage pail term. When people talk about same-sex attraction, they're talking about it very broadly, and it can mean a whole lot of things, okay? It doesn't mean the same thing for everybody. It can be emotional, relational, aesthetic, romantic, and it may or may not include any sexual components. It's something they experience. It's not chosen. It can be fleeting or persistent. And so here's what I want you to really catch. You might have a guy who's, well, you might have anybody who's identifying as LGBTQ and they identify and they're saying, I'm same-sex attracted. That's using the terminology wrong, okay? Because we're talking about identity. We're not talking about attraction. When we're talking about true same-sex attraction, it is just this, like, it can be an emotional pull that they feel, which I have emotional pulls to my girlfriends, right? Like you guys do too. I need something from those girlfriends, right? Mm-hmm. Coffee and good conversation. I just met with a friend for 2 hours this morning and I'm like, my heart is full, right? Like there's some attraction to that. That has nothing to do with same-sex attraction, but all of us experience attraction. It's not chosen. It's fleeting. What I often find with many of the partners I'm working with is their husbands actually experience same-sex arousal. And same-sex arousal is a physiological or a neurological response. It's sexual excitement that happens in their body automatically, sometimes without any conscious intent or desire. And you guys, arousal does not equate to consent, desire, or moral intent. Our bodies can respond even when a person doesn't want to act, right? Like, it's not something we choose. I mean, most wives can say, I was somewhere and I saw a very attractive man and my body went, whoo, but he's not mine and I'm not doing anything with that, right? Same-sex arousal works the same way. That chemical firing in your body isn't your spirit, okay? It's not your spirit. But here's the thing, an arousal doesn't mean a desire for something. So you can experience this sexual arousal. Now, understand this. If a child has experienced sexual trauma, their body might fire chemically and their body might respond. And when that happens, what fires together wires together. So they tend to think that must mean I desire, right? They don't know. They don't know what to do with that. They don't understand why all of a sudden they're having these feelings around men. And it's because of this childhood trauma and they're actually reliving and acting out that trauma. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah, actually, I just felt some relief in my brain and body as you said that. That made so much sense.
And that was Mike's experience. Mike had significant childhood trauma and it came out in that there was this sexual arousal. And here's the thing. This is, my heart goes out to the men who have experienced this and had no safe place to process it. And especially like I think in if they're processing this out in the world today, if you talk about having sexual arousal, people jump immediately to, well, congratulations, you must be gay. Celebrate that. There are even some therapists who would celebrate that, right? Depending on where you're getting your care. And that's why you have to be very cautious. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they are gay at all. It means that they have this not chosen chemical firing happening in their body. That's it. And so if they haven't had a safe place to process that, and the church has probably not been a safe place to process that either, right? So a young man is experiencing this and he doesn't know what to do with that. And his brain is just going to, it must mean this. It must mean this. And he's creating neural pathways in his brain too.
Can you repeat what you said a moment ago about attraction doesn't mean?
So let me just unpack desire a little bit, because desire is an internal inclination or a wish towards something. So it's desiring or wishing towards sexual, emotional, or relational that involves the will more than attraction or arousal. It's this is kind of partially chosen, right? I want closeness or sexual connection with someone of the same sex. It's taking it a step further. So we've got attraction is this basic thing that everybody experiences and we don't choose it. Arousal is also something that we don't choose, but it is a chemical firing, a sexual chemical firing in our body. It's not something that's chosen. And that, again, if a child experiences that, their arousal template is set to that, and it will not change. The arousal template won't change. But their desire—
That can be hard to hear, but I know—
That can be very hard to hear. But here's the thing. Everybody has an arousal template. Like, I mean, and it doesn't have to be sexual. It can be emotional. It can be even desires toward other things. Like, I desire this kind of food and not this kind of food, and that's never going to change, right? Like, we don't want to take that too far. Desire is that next step up the rung. If you think of this almost like the ladder, and we're starting at the bottom rung and we're working our way up, desire is more of, I want this. I want this connection with someone of the same sex. And so it is partially chosen. But then we move to behavior. And behavior is what we do. And behavior is absolutely a chosen action. So it's important to understand that behavior involves agency and decision making. So that's where moral, ethical, and relational responsibility is most clearly located. Is that making sense?
Absolute sense. And okay. So, you know, you fear what you don't know. And when a woman is with a husband or whoever, you know, a husband that is experiencing this, you cannot reconcile in your brain. You cannot file it away. First of all, because most of the time you're living in silence with it. But secondly, we don't have people like you in our life, Vicki, that are saying, oh, let me help unpack this for you. And I'm going to help you file this away in a space where your body doesn't stay on constant alert. So yes. You're just giving us these tools to help us understand the breakdown that so many women have been longing to have this tool. So yes, that makes sense to me. Well, so I hope it makes sense to everyone who's listening as well.
I do too. So we've talked about four of these now: attraction, arousal, desire, behavior, and then the fifth rung is identity. And that's how they make sense of who they are. So that includes how they label themselves, how they interpret and integrate their experiences into their sense of self. So their sexual arousal, their thoughts, their desires, they take all those pieces together and that becomes the identity. And identity is also chosen. So the danger is that I think your original question was like, why is it important to keep these things separate? And that's because lumping them all together creates unnecessary fear and reactive decision-making. It's exactly the example you gave, Jen, of somebody saying, I caught him looking at same-sex pornography, therefore he's gay. You've just made the leap from, we don't know yet what, right? Like an arousal potentially to, they must identify as gay. And that is, I don't want to say probably, but that is not likely to be the case. Many, many more of the men that we are working with have arousal, and we have to deal with what that's about. But we have to keep those separate. So understanding the distinctions between those terms protects against assuming inevitable infidelity, rushing towards labels or conclusions, and it helps people move from confusion to clarity. And that distinction allows truth without panic, right? Because they're going to go into panic, and it creates space for discernment and integrity. Again, most men have not had a safe place either to understand themselves and these terms. No one's talked to them about this. There are going to be some women who I hope are listening to this podcast who say, my husband needs to hear this because he's wrestling with, I look at gay porn. Does that mean I'm gay? No, not necessarily. Probably not. But they're afraid to ask those questions and work out what's true. So I think understanding these terms and these concepts and not lumping them all together as one thing helps wives stay grounded rather than catastrophizing or fortune telling, Like, this must be what's true.
So good. Thank you so much.
Never heard that broken down like that before. And that is so educational and just, wow. Wow. Things I've never thought to think of. Questions I've never thought to ask. Thank you.
Right. Yes. You're welcome. Yes.
So in light of all of this, when a wife's trying to find professional support after learning these things about her mm-hmm. husband, that he's experiencing same-sex attraction, what should she be looking for to ensure she gets the right therapist, someone who's not going to do secondary trauma?
Yes.
Make it worse. Absolutely. How can she ensure that the support she's procured is actually safe and aligned for her situation?
Yeah. Okay. So again, some of these are going to be the same thing for OSA as they are for SSA. But again, there's some nuances here. So trauma-informed, absolutely. And betrayal-aware. Are they trauma-informed about the betrayer and the betrayed? Right? Like, that's super important. Do they explicitly validate her pain, not just his experience? Again, if he's experiencing this and it's from a childhood trauma, the focus can shift to him and not her. I think it's important that they not be experiencing pressure about immediate acceptance of the circumstance or silence or even premature forgiveness. I think what is really challenging and I'm just going to be totally direct here. If faith is important, as it is in my life, if faith is important to the partner, I have to say, first find a betrayal trauma-informed therapist and then find somebody who aligns with your values, okay? And vet your coach or counselor. Vet them. Ask them a million questions. Understand where they are at. Because if faith is an important piece to you, the world, the secular worldview is promoting this. So I hear many wives who have gone to secular therapists who are promoting and saying, hey, well, great. He finally is figuring out who he is. Again, making the leap and the conclusion that he must be gay when they haven't done that work, which is also, I would say, therapeutic abuse. But it's just super important that they find someone who respects her values, her faith, and her pace, and encourages separate support before they start doing couples work. That's really important in this situation.
I cannot imagine the pain a woman would be going through if she's sitting with a trained psychotherapist who says, oh my goodness, confetti. Think, what a breakthrough for him. Wow. And she, her heart's breaking. Her whole world has been napalmed, blown to bits, and she's grieving. And yet she's supposed to, society says she needs to celebrate. Oh mm-hmm. my, what an incredibly, it just yeah, kind of jaw dropping as I think about it. That just,
sometimes it's even more than celebrating. Sometimes it's participating. The message is, bring it all to the table. Let's participate in this together so we can stay together. Therefore, yes. Maybe I need to change who I am and how I am and how I act. And
so then I'm going to ask a vulnerable question. Do these women experience, are they told that's, you know, hate speech? Are they told that that they're like, they can't grieve?
Yeah, absolutely. They hear that. I mean, I've worked with a spouse before who is a partner who is a believer, and they went to a secular therapist, and I would say her husband is leaning on the side of identifying in this world. In fact, is identifying. And the therapist was like, well, let's make a list of things sexually that you're willing to do that he wants. And there was nothing on that list that, you know, he wanted that she was willing to participate in. And so that is dangerous territory for a therapist to be advising things like that. So all that to say, vet your coach, vet your counselor to know where they are values-wise and what they are going to be promoting, because they can quickly frame her discomfort as intolerance. Mm-hmm. And there can be a real pressure for her to carry the emotional responsibility for his processes. And then even, again, it's another red flag if they're in a counseling setting where they are told not to set boundaries in the name of compassion, right? Like, those would be big, big red flags that I'd be concerned about.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. Anything else come to mind along that line that you
yeah.
have experienced or heard of?
I mean, I could tell you stories as long as we have time and more. Like, there's so many so many stories I've told. And I think it's okay too to know it's all right to break up with your coach or your therapist if your values don't align. If this doesn't feel right to you, find another space where you can get the support you need. I think, again, there's not a lot of people who are talking about same-sex arousal, same-sex attraction, and all of those pieces. So you need to try to find somebody who has that training, you know, and who specializes in that if possible. And it's tricky. And then that can come with some, you know, cautions as well.
So we're talking about finding that person, finding that right support and whatnot. And in many of our cases, you know, a woman will step into that arena, not just for themselves, but for their spouse and try to get things lined up. Here are the resources. Here's this podcast. Here's the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast. And it's got this, you know, amazing speaker named Vicky, and she's talking on this subject. And now we can all grow and learn and move the same direction. Yet at the same time, where we want to share these things with our husbands and with other people, there's this internal struggle about not taking responsibility or managing their healing process as well, or sacrificing our own well-being at the same time. So where is that balance? Where is that balance between here's the evidence, here's the direction we need to move, maybe here's the therapist, without completely sacrificing and paying attention to what our own needs are at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so critical that they aren't responsible for carrying the healing of their husband. That's not their job. Support doesn't mean monitoring his emotions and regulating his shame and carrying his secrecy, right? Like, it doesn't mean that. And so, but having some awareness about what's available and sharing that. And again, every single story is different. Like, I can sit in a room. I lead support groups for women whose husbands experience same-sex attraction. It's called Courageous Hearts. And I've sat in those rooms with women where in the same room, you'll have someone whose husband has literally acted out sexually with hundreds of people, and another one who he's, you know, said, hey, I think I might have this, but I don't know. And she doesn't even know what that means. Like, there's an assumption that he's looking at gay porn, but we don't really know. I mean, it can be that whole spectrum. All that to say, there's so much diversity, and what everybody needs is going to be different. And she doesn't have to fix it for them, but having awareness of, here are some options out there for you, here are some places you can go, and then here are some things to be aware of. And I think that's super important.
I know that. Okay, what was the term? OSA?
OSA, yep.
OSA, yep. Opposite sex attracted, betrayed spouses. We're always told, pursue your own healing. My husband says you can't want his healing more than he does. Mm-hmm. So that's same. Can you give us some examples of what a wife would be experiencing that might be different as far as managing his healing? Maybe the, you know, false assumptions or false beliefs that she might have and have to struggle through.
Well, if you think about this, every time a partner listens to a podcast like this, or reads a book on betrayal trauma, or attends a support group, the SSA wife has to adjust what she's heard to make it fit. Okay. A lot of work falls on that betrayed partner to have to translate everything. Okay. And so she's not carrying, I mean, she can't carry his recovery. She can't. And the things that she's hearing education-wise, psychoeducation-wise, she has to translate all of that to make it different. So if you think about this, for example, if women are in a support group together and they're talking about how they make decisions about what to watch on TV, and how if a woman comes on the screen that is scantily dressed, they are changing the channels or they've got a plan, right? So what's a trigger and what's not a trigger for an SSA? With OSA, you kind of know. Mm-hmm. But with SSA, it's less obvious. Is watching sports a trigger? For some of them, it is. Is an action flick a trigger? Absolutely, for some of them, it is, but not for all of them. What's a threat? What isn't a threat? That's less clear. So again, I'm not saying that's her responsibility to figure that out or to understand or to manage. Absolutely not. But these are the issues that we don't always consider for the partner whose husband has SSA, that, oh my word, it's an entirely different ballgame. Most men, most of our husbands are in the world of men. They go to work and they're surrounded by men. We send them off and there's nothing we can do about that. And Jen, it might have even been before we got on that you said something about like, I could never compete with that, right? Like,
absolutely. Getting ready for disclosure, it's like, okay, I'm going to get my mind around this, and this. But if it's this thing, yeah, I can't compete with that. Who can compete with that?
Yeah. And most women, I mean, there's an idealization in the recovery world, you know, that we're hearing stories that we don't match up with anyway. And then you add the layer of SSA and they're like, I really don't match up with that. And what is that, you know, the question that women will ask, what does it mean about me if in this sexualized world where, you know, the perception is that men desire sex with their wives or with women, and my guy doesn't want me, what does that mean? So there's just a whole lot of other weights, if you will, that the wife that we're talking about today is having to carry. And my heart hurts for them and I want to hold that space for them.
So in relation to all that, we talk about safety action plans in our work, helping women come up with a plan. It's like a fire escape plan. If your house catches on fire, you're going to go to this window, you're going to get the ladder, everyone's going to meet at the tree down the block, right? So we all know we're safe. Safety action plan. What happens if you lapses? How do I heal from that? So what sort of protective agreements and safety structures are important early on for both partners when same-sex attraction has been disclosed? What does her safety look like? How is it the same? How is it different?
Yeah. Okay. So I think some of the protective agreements are understanding about things that, okay, so I want to go back to his recovery, if that's okay. Because in his recovery, there's some things that if you as, like, we want him to be in recovery. Yes, and amen, and all of the things. But she needs to be able to understand that not all recovery spaces are neutral or safe for their marriage. Ooh. Some environments are going to normalize secrecy or double lives. They're not going to focus on the marriage. They're going to exclude the wife entirely. And one of the places we want men to have accountability is in support groups. And I would be like so remiss if I didn't address this because this is such a huge, huge issue for every partner that I'm working with. I want you to think about, well, first of all, recovery support should reduce risk, not increase it. Okay, I'm going to say that again.
Please do.
Recovery support should reduce risk, not increase it. So imagine, if you will, that you have a co-ed support group of all opposite sex addicts, right? OSA, all of them have OSA. And they're in a support group and they're hearing each other's struggles. And I mean, what a hot mess. You've got men and women hearing each other's sexual fantasies and struggles and things they desire. And they're in the same group with the people that, like, your husband is in there and he struggles with opposite sex, but then there's these beautiful women in there talking about their struggles. Like, what? Like, not okay. So all that to say, when you find out that your husband has SSA, many people start looking for an SSA-specific group. That would be like putting your husband in the same room with the people he is attracted to. Does this make sense? So this is something that you've got to be aware of and a safety measure. That first of all, SSA is not the shared experience. SSA is the symptom. They need to be in a group with just men who are pursuing recovery. That's the common experience. The common experience might be that there was a trauma or an experience that got them to this place, and now they're chasing hard after recovery. That's the group you're looking for, not, hey, let's put a whole bunch of people who are struggling with SSA together. Now, there might be some groups out there that are safe. I've not found one yet. Okay.
I'm assuming that SSA groups, the way that you're describing them, pursuing recovery, it's not like they're a dime a dozen.
No, they're pretty rare. And very often, there are not safeguards put in place in those groups that create safety. So something that happens very often is that there is something called trolling. Or grooming, right? Where The same thing happens. If you had somebody going to Narcotics Anonymous and they're a drug addict, they're going to go and look for someone they can get high with. Well, the same is here true. They go into quote unquote recovery to find other men, and they have no intention of healing. And your husband might, but we can't control the others. And so things that I would want, a safeguard measure, is that there's agreement between that husband and wife before he goes into a group that they are not going to participate in sidebar conversations, or that, and a lot of these platforms, they do have that, and they encourage one-on-one connection. Go find somebody else you can talk to. Okay. So I can tell you a story of more than one person I've worked with where the wife has picked up her phone and he is in recovery, and she sees that he is in a thread or having a chat with another guy, and they are exchanging inappropriate emojis that look like the shapes of male body parts. Not appropriate. If you had a husband who was OSA and he had an OSA female from his co-ed group, which would never happen, I don't think, and they were exchanging emojis of body parts, nobody would say that's okay or that's funny or you should lighten up. It's completely inappropriate. I've heard those stories more than once. So it's so important that if they're going to be in a group and they're encouraged to connect with others, that they be in a triad, a group of three or more men, not a dyad of two men who are connecting. Does that make sense? Like if they're in a support group and they say, hey, buddy up, they should not buddy up with two, it should be three, and they should not all be SSA guys in that triad. And a safe measure that we really encourage partners to have an agreement with their spouse is that they will be introduced to the triad partners. Just a quick jump on a call. I don't need to know your address and phone number, but I'm jumping on here to say, hey, it's nice to meet you. I'm glad you guys are supporting each other. This is me. Like, there's something about those partners, that triad group of guys who are accountability for each other, having the face of the wife, knowing who they're advocating for when they are encouraging his sobriety. Does that make sense?
That's genius. That makes complete sense. I think it's building empathy.
Yeah.
Giving a face to the, it's, she's not a ghost.
Yes. She's a real person. Yes. She's a real person, not just a name who on his bad days he might throw under the bus and they might not think well of her. Right. But the other thing too, I think, is with these support groups, men can be in a group and they don't necessarily have to be on their platform where all the communication chit chat's happening. That should be an option. If it's not, if you can't get a Zoom link to join a meeting, that's kind of a red flag. I think also being aware that there are some cultures out there. There are some support groups that claim to support SSA and helping them get out of that and helping them recover, but it's become a culture that really is more encouraging of it. Like, I've heard stories of men in those groups all getting naked and complimenting each other's body parts. I'm not sure what academic research they have to support a practice or a model like that, but you have to be aware that those things exist and you have to ask questions. I think when recovery organizations offer support groups, but they don't create and teach and preach systems and safeguards like those that I've just shared, it can really look like institutional betrayal to that wife.
Yeah, that is so right on target. I was going to ask you, because of the shame factor or the embarrassment factor, or maybe even you're just finding things out and you want to protect your husband's reputation. And while it's socially acceptable for him to have contact with a female, what would you say to that woman who is struggling to put it out there, to say, this is what's going on in my world? What advice would you give to that woman to reach out and say, this is my story? It can be really, really scary, especially when you don't fully understand what it is, but knowing full well that his reputation and your marriage's reputation,
I know,
is kind of on the line here. So there's a lot of judgment that goes with staying, you know, when
for sure.
Things are on there. Is, because I'm just going to say, if a wife says, my husband was looking at porn or he got into an affair or whatever, the adages of boys will be boys or, well, yeah, of course, like every man struggles with that. You know, all of those things come up. But when a wife says, my husband's struggling with men. Yeah.
People does not compute. They jump to the conclusion that it's an identity. They just do. And the world is just promoting that so much. So not every place is safe. You have to proceed with caution. Really give yourself permission to slow the process down, right? I think that that's really important, to slow that process down, to find safe support. Betrayal trauma people like myself and Mike, my husband works with men who struggle with same-sex attraction. He works with men who experience OSA as well, right? Like, but he's also APSAT certified and working on his CSASE certification. So that's exciting. Find people like us who are safe, who you can talk to about this. Get in a support group like Courageous Hearts where you can talk freely, but then know that you can go to, you know, for them, OSA groups too, you know, like you can go to any, these wives can go to any support group. They just may not always feel safe talking about it. And because if people don't understand the distinctions that we laid out earlier in the podcast between the different categories, the natural assumption is people are going to jump to conclusions. So I think you do have to be a little bit more careful about how you share your story and making sure that you understand and your husband's doing the work to figure out where he's at before you make any conclusions. I mean, I've had a number of people come to me and they've caught their husband and they've declared him gay and they've announced it to everybody. And now he's lost his job and he's done all these things. And maybe he's not. Maybe as a child, there was a trauma and there's a sexual arousal template in place that has created confusion because he never felt safe to talk about it.
Yeah. You know what we need is, you know how in AA, there's the phrase, friends of Bill? Like you can walk up to a stranger and say, are you friends of Bill? You know that they're in AA. Like that's the secret code, right? We yes. need something like this in this arena because you're dipping your toe in the water. And that phrase, if someone's not friends of Bill, if someone hasn't been to AA or been around people at AA, they wouldn't even know. They'd be like, yeah, I don't know who Bill is, but you know, hope he's a great guy. But if you're in AA, you know, you're like, oh yeah, we've got something in common. There's an immediate understanding of one another.
Yeah.
That's what we need here. We need for women to dip their toe into, I like that you said, take a deep breath, sit back, proceed slowly. But it would be really cool if there was some sort of phrase where you, in this betrayal world, where we could really understand.
A secret code. We maybe need to come up with them.
Yeah, there you go. Opportunity, Vicky, you and Mike, come up with it.
I know, we come up with our code. I know. I do want to throw one other thing because you talked about safeguards or safe structures, Jen. And another one that came to mind here that I don't want to miss talking about is having access to his phone and strong limits around apps and social media. And again, this is not something that people typically think of. But filtering and accountability software is not going to send a red flag for him shopping excessively for men's underwear or following workout pictures of buff men in limited clothing in the gym on Instagram or any other social media app, right? It's not going to identify that that is porn adjacent for the SSA man. Does that make sense? And those are things that, again, you don't have to be the police. But sometimes just knowing that you have free access will help and that is a place to have a boundary, that perhaps social media needs to be off limits. Perhaps you don't buy underwear online. Like there are conversations around things like that that can be boundaries, that these are things that OSA, wives whose husbands experience OSA, don't have to contend with. The other thing that's interesting, and you kind of alluded to this earlier too, we need each other. Men need men in their lives. It becomes complicated and we can't say, oh, you look at male porn and now you desire all men. That's not how that works, right? And remember, arousal doesn't equal desire. So those are stories that we have to stop telling ourselves. But as they create relationships that are healthy, that's great. If at some point those relationships become more intense and the desire, because there's a huge desire for them to belong. what we see in a lot of the SSA guys is they missed something substantial and significant from their childhood, and they didn't belong in that world of men. And so they'll go to the world of men, and when they finally feel like they belong, that can be healthy, or it can become a new bond with men that can threaten, where threatens the safety of his access to his new friends. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden he's prioritizing these friends and these male relationships over her. That's a red flag.
Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder how many people are out there thinking they're homosexual and they're not.
I know.
Secular or faith-based. Three really quick questions. I can't believe it's been an hour already. And Jen has a final question for you when I'm done. First, really fast question. Do you have a handout that we could share in the show notes, or we could tell people to contact you to get, or something that has those categories that you shared earlier in the show? Do you have something like that?
I do not, but I will create something for you. So I will get, you will have one. Okay. No, thank I think you. That would be very helpful. So yes.
Yeah. I'm such a visual learner, and that would be so helpful even for women in, you know, in OSA groups to have better understanding, to help maybe the one woman who is brave enough to speak up in the group. So that would be wonderful. Yes. Another one is, if a couple come to you and Mike and you don't have capacity to help them, are there other counselors and coaches that you know of that you could refer them to? Do you have a network in this area?
It's a very tiny network. It's a very, very tiny network. But yes, we can connect them to other people. We have a couple of guys that work with guys. I have one or two women who work with women. So it just depends on what they need. So yes.
Okay, good. And then my last question is, in this area, I'm pretty comfortable talking with a woman about what happens next. What kind of healing do I need? What kind of support does he need? In this arena, if desire, how did you say it? I'm learning this new language. Desire does not equal
arousal. Attraction doesn't equal arousal. Arousal doesn't equal desire. Desire doesn't equal behavior, and behavior doesn't equal identity.
Thank you. So, What helps these men heal?
You know what? I do think going back and understanding what got this started, and sometimes even just having the safe space to acknowledge that this was arousal and they didn't understand what got them here. I mean, having a safe place to say out loud what is true for them and doing the necessary past work to understand how they got here. What were the messages that they were telling themselves? I'm not the expert at that. That would be much more in Mike's line, right? But what I can tell you is it's hard work. And I do know that some guys have already acted out. Like, again, we've worked with people who have acted out extensively. And if they don't believe that they can have recovery, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt their ability to do this. You have to believe. And, you know, we serve a great big God. And we see people heal from this all the time. We see marriages restored. It's hard. There's probably a higher percentage of divorce in this category than others, but so much of it depends on the willingness. She has to do her own work. Every wife has to do her own work. She has to. She can't do this for him. She can't be like, well, Mike and Vicky, they're the magic bullet. They're going to make this happen. No, 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 no. You guys are the magic bullet plus God, right? We get to just be the resource that helps walk people through this. But a wife can have complete and total healing regardless of the choices her husband makes. That is important. And their marriage can be restored if he's willing to do the work for his healing, but he also can have that healing.
Thank you so much for bringing all of this to us today. While you just shared a tremendously hopeful message, I'm going to ask you if there's an additional message of hope that you might want to share with that wife who's maybe just discovered this. She's in the very beginning phases and she feels completely alone and overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I certainly want to say I see you. My eyes are welling up here because I feel it. Every time I talk to a new wife, I feel it for them. And you're not wrong for needing safety and clarity and time. And this might feel deeply, deeply personal. None of this is because of you. And that being said, your pain matters and you don't have to rush or figure anything out today. there is hope for your healing, and there can be hope for your marriage when both of you are willing to do the work. So I would also just attack on there that we do have a new Courageous Hearts group that's starting early in March. And people will be able to find that information on our website. I do a couple of groups a year. And so just watch our website and you can get on our mailing list and know when a new group is going to be launched.
That's excellent. What does the structure of that group look like?
Yeah, it's an 8-week group. I always say I only take 8. Sometimes I take 9, but never more than 9 women. It's unlike any other group because I've been in lots of support groups for wives, betrayed wives, and these groups they get in and these women start talking because it's the first time they really feel like they can share everything. It really is a Me Too environment, but we're going to take them through some of what we've talked about today, but a lot of very specific things that other people aren't considering in other support groups because we are unique. In this group, you're not going to have to translate everything into SSA experience. It will already be translated for you.
Vicki, thank you so much.
Ditto. You're so welcome. Thank you for carving out time from your busy schedule. I know you have a client you have to get to right now, but it is so such a joy to be just locking arms with you. And thank you for the education you gave us today. And listeners, please know that we are praying for you. Our prayers go into the future. And as you listen, as you process all of this information, know that Jen and Vicki and I are praying over this episode and we're here. So please connect with Vicki on her website. Again, that's liferenovationcc.com. And blessings, everyone.
Thank
Bye
you.
For now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast. We hope you found today's discussion helpful and empowering. For more information, please be sure to check the show notes. Until next time, be kind to yourself and keep pursuing healing. A ministry supported by Pure Life Alliance.